Okay, so what's on our agenda? Our agenda is we want to use our sugya to get a little bit of an overview of the topics of Migo. And I hope it hasn't been too arduous. Where are people holding marmakomos wise? Anyone finish the whole sheet?
Yeah, around the table.
Okay, you're working your way through Shas. Anyone finish the whole sheet? No one finished it. I had a half minute, so today. Tomorrow, okay. You know the joke about that. They say that Ksubis is the key to Shas. It covers so many things, so somebody once commented, so for Ksubis is the key in, Kulin is the key out. Kulin is the smicha b'chinas. So, in any event, so that's your agenda now.
Exactly.
So, you'll come on the other side, you'll know all the Shas. So, in any event, so what we'd like to do within the sugya is to use this sugya to have the really phenomenal opportunity to encounter Migo a little bit through the Pesach of our Tosfos on Daf Beis Amud Aleph. So essentially yesterday we tried to lay out a little bit of the bare bones of what there is to talk about, and since the answers prompted various nuances within Migo, we thought we would hold those up as ways to look at the sugya. And if one wanted to talk about everything in Migo, so one could easily spend the entire year talking about Migo. I'm not sure whether anybody would be up for that or not. It's actually more exciting than you might think, but that's not our agenda. But at least the chapters within Migo's history that are referenced within our Tosfos, not necessarily Tosfos itself, but the Rishonim who come to the discussion of Tosfos, it's a good opportunity to look at those at least. So the various answers that are suggested in the Rishonim, we'll try to at least pay attention to those concepts within Migo. So yesterday we talked a little bit about the fact that we have this basic principle of Migo, that if I have a bunch of different tainas I could use, so if I happen to use a weaker taina and a better taina was available to me, so then the weaker taina becomes credible, becomes workable. Maybe credible is too much of a judgment. Becomes workable, even though it wouldn't have been workable otherwise. And we saw yesterday some discussion about whether that's a Minat Torah principle, which is really the assumption most make, or whether it's Drabanan, which was a minority view we saw in the Ravid and the Tmim Deim and the Meiri. We discussed a little bit about if it's a Din Drabanan, why would Chazal institute such a thing? And then we talked a little bit about if the assumption is it's Daraisa, so first of all, is it the same thing as Pesha Aser? Is it different than Pesha Aser? Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit today as well. And the question of what exactly is it? Is it a function of credibility? Is it a function that you have nemanus because you could have said a better lie if you wanted to lie? So therefore, why would you lie this way? Or is it a function of koach hatayna, that essentially you have a certain edge, you have a certain advantage to your deck of cards because this taina was available to you? So if you choose not to use it out of honesty or whatever, so then that power still resides within you, and you can call upon that power with the taina that you are making. Aaron, question about that? The first one is closer to Birur.
The second one, since you could have used the second one, you have that in your purview, so is that mean your Mavara, that since you're using that one? Since you're using that one, therefore, it's true, where the second one is in and of itself at time now?
Correct. So the word birur is more associated with the first one. Now, as we'll discuss, there's a whole continuum along what is a birur. A birur could mean an actual clarification, like the word suggests, meaning you really think something is true. Or it could mean it sheds some light on something, but it's not absolute. And as we'll see, within Migo, there could be a lot of different nuances. It's interesting that when you bring up the word birur, it's just, you could perhaps give the model that when we talk about, maybe this is a kind of a rough parallel, but maybe it helps illustrate it a little bit. When we talk about rov, or chazakas especially is going to be a major issue here, or a rov also is a relevant concept. So the times that we follow a rov, or the times that we follow a chazaka, so there is always a discussion, so is that a birur, or is that, let's say, a hanhaga? Meaning that would we say that this tells us, because of the rov, we believe this is true, we believe this is the correct answer to the question? Or maybe not. Maybe the facts don't justify such an assumption that this is actually true, But because of the rov is better than nothing, that gives us a reason to act this way. So Hanhaga, we will follow this practice, even if it's not necessarily proven to us that it's actually true. Or we don't even maybe think that it's true. We have nothing else to go on. So we have the rov. The rov itself is a reason, even without necessarily reflecting truth. So you have something parallel to those two possibilities here, that Migo, maybe you have credibility because of this, or it's not necessarily about credibility. It's a reason to work in your favor, even if it doesn't necessarily mean you're more likely to be telling the truth as a function of this Migo. Hi.
If you say it's in Hanhaga, what is it that's creating that? Why is
it? Because maybe if we have a standstill between two people, so we add up points essentially, right? That could be what's going on when it comes to our whole Yachloku, Kol Dom Gvar, everything, right? That sometimes we look to try to figure out what the facts are, and sometimes that's not accessible to us, so we essentially add up points on each side. So maybe that's what's going on here, that it's not necessarily that we believe him any more than the other guy, but this reflects the fact that he has points. And the availability of a valid taina to him is valuable, even if it's not the taina that he's putting forward. The fact that he has something to, and we'll talk about this, actually I don't know if we mentioned this yesterday, there are some who associate Migo with a concept we find elsewhere called biyado. You're familiar with that concept, that if a person has the control over a situation, so then that also gives him credibility. Even though it doesn't necessarily mean that he exerted the control. But sometimes in various areas of halacha that we give somebody credibility if the circumstance is under their control. It just gives them an extra edge, so to speak, even though it doesn't necessarily tell us that they actually did anything to exert that control. So too, maybe migo, meaning there's a greater range of options open to this person, is parallel to biyado. This person had more to work with in terms of advocating their case, it makes their case stronger. Hi. Let's say a question of beer chametz. You know, if somebody tells you that he cleaned out the house of chametz and he has the ability to do it, so he has an emunus that he did it. You know, you find with many, many different usages. This is the first one that comes to mind. But the idea, a person has greater credibility reporting on something that he could have done or can do. And that's also an interesting question. I mean, it has to be biyado once upon a time, even if it's not biyado now, or has to be actually biyado at the moment. That's a whole discussion. It's a little bit far afield. But there are those who draw a parallel between migo and biyado. It refers to the fact the person has a greater range of access. Can't close the door in there, right? And the person has a greater range of access, and therefore he has more influence over the situation. So we then got on to addressing the question through our Tosfos. Our Tosfos wants to know, why is it that when you have a situation where you don't have both parties saying, I own the whole thing, but rather you have one party saying, I own the whole thing, and the other party says, I own half of it. So the din in the Mishnah is, it's 75-25. The guy who wants everything gets 3/4, and the guy who wants half of it gets 1/4. So asks Tosfos, why should we give this half guy 1/4? Let's give him the whole half. Because he could have gotten the whole half. He could have said, I own the whole thing. And he know the Mishnah that will give him half. So he could have used a stronger taina to get everything he wants. So since he could have gotten that, let's give it to him. Let's say Migo, let's give it to him. So we saw, there maybe are more, but we saw yesterday 5 approaches in the Rishonim.
Hi.
There's a class in here.
Yeah.
Okay, we're trying to figure that out. So is the room open?
I know.
Okay, so quick pause.
Right. I mean, I'm recording, should I keep it paused?
I'll pause it for a moment.
I don't know how to pause.
You're like a traveler.
All right, so to pick up where we left off a minute ago. So we discussed various answers. The popular answer, which I want to focus on first, is a question that maybe this is considered to be Migo Lahotzi, and maybe Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrinon. We also mentioned a few other answers, just to quickly review what they were. Another popular answer was Mamo Mamo, that we don't use Migo to transfer from one subject of a claim to another. We also saw that maybe it should be proportional, some Rishonim suggest, that in his Migo he would get half of the claim. So here he also gets half of the claims. He essentially does get his Migo. We also saw the discussion of whether this is Migo de Ha'aza, Perhaps he has a reason not to say the bigger plane because it's too brazen. And also the possibility that we're not worried about him lying in this case, we're worried about him making a mistake. Because the whole premise is that he thinks he picked it up at the same time as the other guy, so maybe he just thinks that's the case, but maybe he's wrong. And therefore, the Migo is not helpful in establishing whether that's accurate or not. So, as I indicated before, so I'd like to take the opportunity of that discussion to focus on some of those big topics, Migo Lahotzi, Migo Mam Lamaman, Migo Da'aza perhaps, and at least those parts of Migo to get a window into it through our sugya. So first of all, let's start with Migo Lahotzi. Okay, so Migo Lahotzi, as you can see just from our Rishonim, it is a machlokas whether or not this is true. Right? Do we assume that Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrinan, is that a real klal? The Gemara doesn't explicitly state it. The Rishonim, sometimes hard to know what's a real sugya and what's not, because when Rishonim use a phrase that you get the see feeling like it exists somewhere. Sounds like it's quotation when really it's more original. So, Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrinan, is that a Gemara? Is that based on Shas? So we have to figure out, is that true? Is that something that is accepted, Lahavacha? Just parenthetically, just an interesting, I'm not even sure if I'm getting this right, but it's just an interesting side note that we mentioned the Kajigal of a Rav in the past and his very creative thought processes. So he has a comment in his Chuvas Eretz Tzvi. He has a comment on this Tosfos. As he notes that the Pnei Yeshua asks the following question. He says, Pnei Yeshua asks that if you have a situation where you're going to give three quarters to one and one to the other, one quarter to the other, the last din in the Mishnah, so we've lost a major element of our premise in Yachloku once you say that. If you recall, there are Rishonim who favored Yachloku because of Chaluku Yecholi Os Emes. So ask the Pnei Yeshua, is there any MS to the idea that it's three quarters and one quarter? Half and half it could be because maybe they picked it up at the same time. But once you have a chiluk of three quarters and one quarter, you've lost your grasp on the truth. You've lost your grasp on chaluki yecholios emes. So the Kajik lover discusses the Pnei Yeshua, which he ends up not liking for other reasons. The premise of the Pnei Yeshua, by the way, is that we should therefore say, since if it's a yecholios emes, what should we say instead? Hey munach, exactly, let's just leave it forever. So the Kajik lover has a fascinating discussion. He says, you see here the Rishonim raise the issue that it's Migo Lahotzi. And so essentially you are going to be taking away the other guy's quarter based on this Migo. But according to the Pnei Yeshua, what really should have been the din? Yehi Munach. So therefore what would your Migo do? Your Migo wouldn't be getting it from the other guy, he'd be getting it from Milyo. It's not a Mukhsar for our purposes. Right? So therefore if the other premise was that Yehi Munach, so then our Migo works. So then, you could say that the Migo works enough to bring it back into Yachloku. That because he has Nehmanis against Elio, so now that's at least an effective Migo, and now it's a Migo to give him his quarter, so we can do it as not a Migo against the other guy, but he has Migo against the non-Chazak of Elio, so it ends up that we can say three quarters and one quarter. So it's a fascinating point, whether it's true or not. In the end, he says he doesn't think the Pnei Yeshua's question is right for other reasons. But he says, working within the Pnei Yeshua's premise, you could say that our Migo brings things back into the din of the Mishnah. Now, his whole issue of who is the opposing force is something that's relevant to the question in general. So it's important to keep in mind when we talk about the answers to this Tosfos, why is it that one might disagree with this answer? So one reason we might disagree is because, as some of the Rishonim say explicitly, they don't agree that we don't say Migo Lahotzi. And as we'll discuss, there are quite a few Rishonim who do take the position that we do say Migo Lahotzi. That would be one very good reason to disagree with this Tosfos. However, as we alluded to yesterday, there are other reasons to disagree. And the question is Shnayim Ochsin a case of Migo Lahotzi? So I don't want to spend that much time on this because it really plugs into the discussions we had before Yontif. But just to refresh our memories, and we alluded to it yesterday also, but just to refresh our memories enough so that we can be aware of the other possibilities here. So you could say, well, no, migo lahotzi, yes, you're right, lo amrinan. But that's not going to answer our question because this is not lahotzi. Right, so that prompts the question, is there a muchzak here? Again, this is a topic we discussed a lot before Yantiv. And there are a number of ways of seeing it. And it's just important to be aware of the possibilities because they affect how we understand these concepts. It could be that there's no muchzak in the case of the talus. It could be that each one is considered muchzak in half. It could be that each one is muchzak in the whole talus, they're both muchzak at the same time. Or it could be that neither one is muchzak, but they're considered tafus. It's a lower level that somebody is holding on to something, let's say because he grabbed it, so we don't think that his holding on to it has any indication of actual historical ownership, but it's a status nonetheless. To take something away from somebody who is tofes something also requires a certain threshold. It's a lower threshold than muchzak, but it's also something. So all of these possibilities exist within Shneimochs and Batalas. Right, it could be that we don't grant any kind of chashivas to these two parties at all. They've established themselves as the players, but that's about it. It could be they are muchzakim in their piece. In which case, then if each one's muchzak in his own piece, so then you're the question of being motzi is that you're taking away the other guy's quarter. If we say each one is muchzak in the whole talus, or in this case, the whole half talus, so then motzi means not that you are taking away somebody's property, but that you are excluding someone from the chazaka, that the chazaka right now has two people, and you are literally motzi min ha-muchzak, you are taking him out of the group that is a part of the chazaka. Maybe that's a different standard. Or maybe there's no chazaka at all, but there's something, there's tfisa, this person is a tafus because he's holding on to it, and maybe there's a threshold to take something away from a tafus because it's not a chazaka, but it's more than nothing. Hi.
You could perhaps say that when they're both muchzak or something, really, that means nobody's muchzak anymore. And
that's
Migul
Hatzik. Right, so that's also a part of it. So then the other person's, which is how some of the Rishonim understand it, right? That there's no, like the Tosfos Rid talks about over here in this Tosfos, that it's not a question of you're trying to motzi, it's a question of you're just solidifying your own status on the half of the tal, the half or quarter, as the case may be, that you have here. So all of those possibilities might exist within Shneimochsen. So just some of them are tangential, and some of them just are a question of how you understand the talus, but some of them shed some light on our question of migo. So maybe we'll say migo can't be motzi min al muchzak, but maybe it can't migo, but maybe it can be motzi min al tafus. And that, by the way, if you want to look it up, I was debating whether to give additional marmakomas for today that focus on migo lahotzi. Figured everyone's still busy from yesterday, but I could, if you want, give you a separate list maybe for tomorrow in case you get up to it. So one of the things to look at is the ksos and simen pei beis and sifir aleph. So the ksos has an argument with the tuba. And the ksos works off the assumption that the reason you would say migo lahotzi lo amrinan is because amigo is not strong enough to be motzim and amosa. Right, that's probably the most intuitive guess. But that doesn't mean that it's not effective against the tafus. If somebody is just toe-faced something, somebody grabs something, so then, or maybe if the case of our Mishnah is comparable to a tafus, so then we should say that amigo would work. And he quotes that the Tumim said the opposite. The Tumim won't allow Migo to work even against the Tafus, and he disagrees. So that might be very relevant to our Mishnah. Is this a good answer for our Mishnah or not? We'd have to figure out what is the status of the two parties here. Are they actual Muchzakim, or are they nothing, or are they Tofsim? Are they somewhere in between? And then it's relevant, the whole Machlokas, that even if you say Migo Lahotzi doesn't work, maybe it should work by a tafus, that's a machlokas, the ksos, and the tumim, and might be relevant to our sugya as well. So just to, you know, to clarify again the terms, for our what's the difference between a muchzak and a tafus for our purposes? Both a muchzak and a tafus are holding on to something. But in the case of the muchzak, we believe that their holding on to it is indicative of some prior history, of some actual legal status. And Tufus, you're holding on to it, but there's no belief that that means you owned it originally. Or there's no presumption to that point from the holding on to it. And it's either very weak, maybe meaningless. Sometimes we'll just say we'll take it away from the Tufus. Or if we don't take something away from a Tofes, we mean that it's an edge. The fact is it's in somebody's physical possession right now. That's not the same thing as a chazaka. It's not a physical possession that proves anything about his history, but it puts the default in his hands, and sometimes the default is significant. Before I take this question, is that distinction clear? I think it's a relatively simple way to say it. Both a tofes and a muchzak are holding on to something, but the muchzak's possession, we take it as indicative of something beyond it. And the tofes, it doesn't mean much more than the fact that he has it, but maybe sometimes that gives him at least the default. Okay, is that more or less clear? So I saw three hands up. I'm not sure who the first was going to go. Jonathan, Eli, Aaron.
So we were discussing Ochsa Nechloku originally. We quoted some opinions in Achronin that although we might not be dealing with an all-out chazaka, we might still be dealing with a weaker type of chazaka. But they weren't willing to say that just with a stam tvisa or something more than that. So how would that necessarily affect?
So it becomes a little subjective, somewhere along a continuum. But it might be that there's a subjective answer to the Migo question also in terms of how we're adding up the points on either side. You know, we may end up with somewhat of a messy decision. So it's simpler to talk in terms of these terms. But so for our purposes, let's say we could look at it at least four different ways, which, not asking anybody to try to figure out which one it is right now, but just in terms of what is up against the Migo, it'll possibly make a difference. Now, is the Migo about fighting against essentially nothing, like the Rishon who say this simply is not a case of Migo Lahotzi? Is it up against the other extreme, an actual Mukhzak? Is it up against somebody who shares the same Chazak as you, and as Aaron says, therefore maybe that's more appropriately understood as Migo Lahachzik for yourself by excluding the other guy? Or is it up against the weakest version? It's not nothing, but it's a Tafos, and maybe that also is subject to a limit. And just to clarify why one might say one or the other, so the Ktsos's approach is that Migo is simply not as strong as a actual Mukhzak. So therefore, for a Tofes, Migo could work. Now the Tumim, who he's disagreeing with, he might say, like a lot of other Acharon, who say it's not about fighting a Mukhzak. But it's something, there's many different nuances, many different ways to say it, as we'll see, maybe at this point we'll see tomorrow, but that maybe Migo simply is not about doing things, it's about leaving things the way they are. And there are various different ways to say that. And therefore, to move property at all through Migo is not going to happen, whether it's a Mukhzak, whether it's a Tofes, whether it's anything like that. Maybe even, as some point out, maybe even to get you something from Hefker, but there's no Mukhzak. Maybe Migo never does anything like that. Maybe Migo just solidifies things where they are. So that could lead to a position like the Tumim, that if it involves moving property at all, then Migo's not going to work. And the Ktos will say, no, it's just not good enough to deal with an actual Mukhzak. But if it falls short of a Mukhzak, it could work. So a lot of this is relevant to a Gemara in Bava Basra, which I think you probably did see. It was on yesterday's Marmar Komos, and a lot of the Rishonim deal with that Gemara and dealing with this Gemara and Zatosis that deals with that Gemara. So it's the Gemara in Cheskes Abatim and Flamid Beis, which if you got a chance to see, it's a whole exciting Gemara. I'll have to turn to the iPad for the Bava Basra, even though I'm in the same room with my Bava Metzia finally. But the Gemara in Bava Basra has a discussion, just to quickly reference it, when the Beis and the Aleph, when the Beis and the Beis. So there was a question first, there's two machlokas in the Gemara. And there's two scenarios. One scenario is, there is a fight over land. So Hahu Damar Lechavre, my boy is Bahayara. Somebody says to his friend, what are you doing on my land? And so we learned Cheskes Abatim to keep all the examples simple. So it was called the Marikama Mari. And the Machzik, or the alleged Machzik, the guy who's living on the property now, he's Zeke. So Mari and Zeke. So Mari says to Zeke, he says, what are you doing on my land? So Zeke responds, Amalei minach tzvente, I bought it from you. V'hai shtara, and here's the proof. Here I have the shtar. So Zeke brings the shtar, and Murray doesn't like it. Murray says, no way, Amalei, this is happening with Beis and with Beis, Amalei shtara zayfuhu. So he tells him, I don't believe your shtar, I think your shtar is a false shtar. Now, what does he mean by a false shtar? There's a lot to say, but for now, just in terms of what the Gemara says. So, Gachin, Lachish Lidl Rabba. So, Zeke leans over and he whispers to Rabba, funny you should mention that. You know what? In Shtar Zayfahu, Tak, it is pretty much a false shtar. But, you know what? I actually had a real shtar. Mihu Shtar Ma'al Yahavalei V'irchas. I really did buy this land and I had a real shtar. V'amina Inkut Hai V'adai. Called who? So let me. I figured I'll take this and I'll have something. So even though I've made up the shtar, but it represents the actual shtar that I really had. And when we learned the Cheskes Abatim, something that bothered me very much about this Gemara, and I don't know if I have a real satisfactory answer to. I remember I discussed it with Rabbi Reese at the time in his capacity as Av Bezdin. And what's nothing to do with Migo at all. But what's troubling about this Gemara is how is he allowed to whisper anything to Rabbi? That's a major violation of Beis Din proceedings. I don't know if Rabbi was not the dayan here, if sometimes he was his legal advisor or something. But normally, if you had a Din Torah, just so you know, if you ever find yourself in this position, right, it's an Issur Daraisa for a dayan to listen to one side without the other. So that would include if they're physically in different places, or that would include if one guy is whispering or one guy is speaking Yiddish and the other guy doesn't understand Yiddish. It comes up a lot also that any scenario where one party can talk and the other guy can't hear, so that's a violation of Beis Din proceedings, proceeding protocols. So what exactly is the circumstance here that he was allowed to whisper to him? That's an open question. Nothing to do with Migo, but just something that you can't let this Gemara pass without commenting on. So in any event, so we said, yeah, Take was false, but I also have a real shtar. So they say back to him, so what was Rabbi's position? So Mava Lashakir, Iba Amrle Shtar Ma'alyu. That why should he lie? He could have gotten away with claiming it was a real shtar. So what does that sound like, Mava Lashakir? Sounds like Migo. Right, they were given credibility because he could have lied without having to make up the story, which puts him in a bad position. And it puts him in an awkward position to say, yeah, Itaka did fake up a shtar, but I did it because I have a real shtar. So that is not an advantageous way to present yourself, so it's probably the truth. Because he didn't have to say that. And Rav Yosef responds, I'm a Rav Yosef, Amai Samachta Hai Shtara, why would you do anything with your shtar? Hai Shtara, Chas B'Almahu, this is just clay, this is a worthless shtar. He made it up, he told you it's a fake shtar. It doesn't have any credibility at all. So it sounds like from that Gemara that they're arguing in Migo. That according to Rava, there's a Migo here that should work. And according to Rav Yosef, we're not willing to rely on the Migo. Then the Gemara goes on to give what seems like an identical case. Hahudo Amar Lechavre, somebody said to his friend, Havli Meyazuze de Masiknabach, pay me $100 you owe me. Vaha Shtara, here's the Shtar that proves it. Amar Le Shtara Zayfahu. So the other guy says, no, it's a fake Shtar. So once again, poor Rabbi keeps running into these kind of people. Gachem lachish le Rabbi. So he says, yeah, I hear you're the guy who hears stories about fake shtars. So you should know that, yeah, Taka, this is a fake shtar. In shtar zayfa, mihu shtar ma'al yahavle, the irfas. I had a good shtar and I lost it. So v'amini inkot hai bi'adai called it. Sounds like it's the exact same story. Amalei Rabbi ma'al shakir, iboy amalei shtar ma'al yahu, amalei v'yosef, ma'ikai samachta hai shtar chas ba'almahu. So it sounds like the exact same case. Same positions taken on each issue, same arguments made. Seems like it's the same case twice. However, that's apparently not the case, because then the Gemara concludes, So Amar Rav Idi Bar Avin Hilchas Akavase the Rabba Ba'ara Hilchas Akavase the Rab Yosef Bezuze. So in the first case, apparently Rab is right that we rely on this Malo Shaker, and in the case of the money, we rely on Rav Yosef's view that we don't follow the Malo Shaker. Hilchas Rab Ba'ara Dehecha Dekaima Ara Tikum. We leave it where it is. Hilchas Akavase Rav Yosef Bezuze Dehecha Dekaima Zuze Lukme. We leave the money where it is. So we're going to have to let you go in a minute, so just to set up enough so we can continue with this tomorrow. So essentially what sounds like in this Gemara in Bava Basra is that there is a machlokis whether to rely on Migo in this case or not. And it's a machlokis Amaroim, it sounds like. And then there's a distinction made between the land case and the money case. So just the bare bones of what revolves around this Gemara, and we'll have to continue with it tomorrow. So if you saw Tosfos, and if you see the Rashba and a few others, so they maintain that it's a machlokis in the Gemara, whether migo lahotzi, that these are cases of migo lahotzi, and or at least let's say the first case is a case of migo lahotzi, and Rabba says, yeah, migo lahotzi works, let's give this guy the migo, and Rav Yosef says, no. That's essentially it's a machlokis in the Gemara, migo lahotzi, sorry? And so that's the way some of the Rishonim understand. A lot of the Rishonim who say straight out that migo lahotzi amrinon, that we do say Migul Lahotzi are also on that Gemara. If you look at the Ran, you look at the Ramban, a lot of the Rishonim who say we do believe in Migul Lahotzi are commenting on that passage specifically. So the question is, why does the Gemara distinguish? So the Gemara invokes a Chazaka premise, basically, just leave things where they are. So it sounds like it's dealing with two different cases. That in the case of the land, so you don't have a real Muchzak. You have the guy living there who doesn't have 3 years of history on the land yet. He doesn't have a Cheskas Gimel Shanim. You don't have a normal Muchzak when it comes to land. So who's he working against? He's working on Murray. He's working against Murray. Murray is not holding on to the land right now, if he could be. So his status is Murray Kama, as the name indicates. So Murray Kama is weaker than Muchzak. So maybe then the Gemara is saying that, yes, you could be Motzi from a Murray Kama. While the case of the money, you have more of an actual muchzak. Somebody has his own money in his pocket, and then maybe the Gemara is concluding, Migo lahotzi lo amrina, when it's an actual muchzak. So one could read the Gemara as saying that Migo lahotzi amrina by less than an actual muchzak, by a marakama, and not by an actual muchzak. But one could read the Gemara in many different ways, as you'll see, and I'm sorry to keep you late, just to tell you another word about this because of the LA schedule. So that there, if you look at in the Rishonim on that Gemara, there's a lot of discussion what exactly was going on. How strong was his Migo to begin with? He could have gotten away with a fake star. Why could he have gotten away with a fake star? Because it was such a great forgery that it would have fooled everyone? Because it was a genuine star, but it was about something else? It was a different type of star? How much Nemanis did he have? There's a lot of debate about the facts of the Gemara, so it's hard to know how much to get out of the Gemara. But it's a major battleground. That Rishonim saying that that's essentially the machlokes in the Gemara. Some Rishonim learning from the Gemara, you're right, there is no Migul Lahotzi. Some Rishonim learning from the Gemara that there is Migul Lahotzi. And just if you would look tomorrow, I'll give you perhaps a new list. You can look inside. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Pei Beis, in Sif Yud Aleph, the Ramah there has a machlokes. The Ramah says that many say Migul Lahotzi lo amrinan. And he quotes a lot of Rishonim in the parentheses over there. And then he says, V'yesh omrim, migo lahotzi amrinan. And he quotes the Tshuvas Rivash. And it seems to be it's essentially there for a machlokis in the Ramah. And the Shach, in the next siman in Pei Gimel Tes, again I'll give you the list tomorrow, but the Shach over there, the Shach who's one of the big authorities in Mammonis in general, but especially Migo, was one of the main machabrim of the laws of Migo in general. So the Shach says, the Sveka Dedina. And a lot of the Suffolk revolves around interpreting this Gemara in Bava Basra, which he discusses, if you take a look. And he also says, so since I say it's a Sveka Dedina, so what good is that? So already it can't be Motzim and a Muchzak with a Suffolk, and the whole question is whether you can be Motzim and a Muchzak. So he says, Sveka Dedina, Nafkamina for Tfisa. That same question that we started with, if you'll take away from a Tafas, the Machlokas, the Ksos and the Tumim, and possibly relevant to Shnei Mochs and Batalis, the Shach quotes that as a ramification of his decision that the central question of Migo Lahotzi is essentially a Suffolk, whether we say it or not. All right, so we'll have to continue with that tomorrow, and maybe give you a little bit more to look at. Everyone should have a wonderful day. So let's assume we're in this classroom.